If the bell rang or not.
I think I just heard it.
Yeah, I think you did.
Guys are in good voice this morning, which is good. It's always nice to have everybody chatting and talking with one another, because it probably means that you like one another. It's always nice. This is the parenting class. We have a few visitors this morning. We're thankful for your presence. And it's only because you're parents that you're here. Because of what we did this weekend, you're probably here to pick up your children. So hopefully this class will be beneficial. We'll see. We'll try to make it that way. We're going to look at, for those of you who are regulars, the last part. We're going to try to wrap up lesson two in the parenting. I'm going to start with, I think it's question three. We sort of introduced that last week, but we didn't develop it the way I wanted to develop it. I want to talk about that some more. And remember, the focus of this class, as opposed to Dave, and not that we're doing things differently, but his focus on Wednesday night is, you know, how can we somehow get our kids to be passionate about Christ? And what role can we play to help that happen? And in the Sunday morning class, it's more like, if Jesus were a parent, and in a sense, we've said that he is or was, but if he were a parent, how would he parent? What were the thing would be the things that he would use? So we're going to build on that a little bit more this morning. Before we start, though, Zach Brown, would you lead us in? We looked last week kind of like what would be some traits that we could draw from Jesus, some things that he demonstrated through the way he taught. And we looked at the primary thing. Come on in. The primary thing for me was that he was focused and he was insightful. He wasn't going to be deterred from what he knew to be his goals. And as parents, we can do that. You know, we set priorities in our lives, and if we're consistent to those priorities, our kids see them. But he was also insightful. You know, a skill that a lot of you have, a lot more than I have, but some of you have, you know, just a real grasp on being insightful. It's something, though, that we can learn. The more we know, the more we learn, the more we observe and try to maneuver through this life, we figure things out. We don't have maybe the level of insightfulness that Jesus did, but we are all more insightful now than we probably were last year, certainly than we were as children. And our kids see that. But those are kind of traits. I want to look this morning at some characteristics. And maybe you're going, well, what's the difference? And I'm going to try to explain at least what my view of the difference is for you anyway. But traits are more like just inherent qualities of a person. Characteristics are more things that they can learn. They can, like, maybe it didn't come easy to me. Maybe it's not a natural quality about my life, but it's something that I admire in someone else or that I see in Scripture, and I want to adapt it. So we're going to look at that. Wherever you find a place, Scott.
That's right.
Wes and Jamie, good luck.
Yeah. Over here.
Okay. So we have a full class. Those of you who are visiting, I apologize, I don't have a lesson sheet for you, but it probably is going to be okay. What we're going to do is look at how Jesus might have parented if he were a parent. And this morning I want to look at some characteristics that Jesus taught, that Jesus exhibited, and characteristics that you might say, this one is the most important to me. And so that really was the question. If you've got a lesson sheet, question three says, if you had to choose just one characteristic that you either saw in Jesus or you read that he taught, what would that characteristic be? So I'm going to start with that. I'll probably write a few of these on the board. But given that as sort of the introduction, characteristic that Jesus taught or exhibited that you think as a parent would be really valuable if you could do it for your kids. Heather.
Humility.
Let me get started. I bet you're not the only one who thought of that.
Probably thought of it first.
We're going to go back and look at these a little bit more. Eric?
Love for God, love for your fellow man, love for life.
Okay, we'll develop that, but I like that. Sarah?
Patience.
That did come up last week as maybe one of the traits.
Related to humility, service.
Service? Okay. Come on, there's got to be more.
We're doing characteristics or styles?
Well, I don't know. Show me, throw something out and I'll tell you whether I like it or not.
So what I love about Jesus and his teaching is parables, the story. That's more of a style.
Yeah.
And the reason why I don't want to jump ahead to something that you're covering later, but the reason why I like that as a teaching style, especially with children, is sometimes the child is upset, they have a problem, whatever's going on, and instead you tell them a story, and it activates their mind. Instead of them feeling like you're commanding and telling them what to do, you're telling them the story, and they learn the moral on their own. It engages their brain in a way that's totally different than telling them what to do. Instead, it learns from a different way.
And there's very little of do this and don't do that in Jesus' teaching. Let me explain why. Let me explain what. So the parables, or we might say, the metaphors. We do that all the time. That's how we teach. That's how we talk.
Right.
But Jesus was a master at it.
Oh, absolutely.
We can maybe put that idea into a characteristic for empathy, because the idea is that he can imagine how someone else would feel in that moment and what would help them, and then that's what the parables
come okay, out of. I like that. I do. Thanks. Come on. All right, Rich.
So, I don't know how to put this succinctly, but he treated everybody equally. He treated everybody like they mattered. And I think that's really important for us with our kids, that we don't treat them like they're special and everyone else is not, because that's the message they get from society.
I'll put that up there.
That's good. Impartial.
Okay. Somebody else. Yes.
He knew what his priorities were, and he stick with those priorities and didn't necessarily waver on the small stuff or non-important stuff.
I'll just say set priorities, because your priorities might be a little different than mine and someone else's. But the kids, if we set some priorities or we act in a certain way so that that's what they get from our actions, and then we're inconsistent, we're going to really send a conflicting message.
Yeah. Obedience to God.
Obedience. And I'm going to leave out to God there just for a minute.
Sure.
Try to spell this right. Okay. Jake?
He was sacrificial, and I just mean that might fit under a lot of these other things, but he put others' needs before him.
That one might be a little fun when we get ready to.
Uh-huh.
There you go. No, I got an extra I. Those of you who are school teachers, you know the difficulty
of this.
It was right.
While we're reflecting, can we get another I in humility?
Yeah.
Wow. That'll cost you $200.
Daughter and school teacher. Oh, okay.
Off of that,
because
I don't spell either. Genuine or transparent?
Transparent is the catch word of the day. I like genuine better.
I like it too.
Can we throw honesty up there? That's what genuine made me think of that a little bit.
I'm not sure. Yes, you throw it in there. Yeah,
I think he had a lot of confidence in his message.
Confidence?
Confidence. Yeah, I mean, you can tell immediately if someone is confident in what they're saying, and if they're not, you will tend to question whether it's true or not.
Yeah. Okay. That could be interesting, because we could have false confidence if we're not careful. But I like that. Dave?
Nobody said it, but he was perfectly holy.
I'm going to put that one over here. We're going to have fun with that one, too, because we're called to be holy. We're actually commanded to be holy. And we don't think that's even possible sometimes. Yeah.
It's kind of similar to empathy, but compassionate.
Kind of similar to love, too. So I'm going to do this. Troy first, and we'll come back to you.
Is it discerning or discerning?
Discerning. Mm-hmm. See if I can spell this one. Yes.
He was meek. And Dave
that's
Barnes.
One of mine.
Yeah, so Dave Barnes did a, and Miller, he did a sermon on this, and he, I like his definition, is meek is power under control.
Yes, strength under control.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Christy.
Merciful.
Merciful. That was another one of mine. I'm not sure that means anything.
Oh, it does.
Okay. We have a nice list up here. So what I want you to do is think about using kind of Scott's intro. What does it mean? I mean, we can throw these words out, but what does it mean? And then more than that, how does that play out? You know, what does that look like in real life? And that was the whole point of parables. But, well, all right, I'm going to teach you a principle. I'm going to teach you a lesson. But I'm not going to say do this and don't do that. I'm going to give you an illustration of how that plays out. So for the rest of the class, we're going to look at these things, maybe not all of them, but we're going to look at some of them, and I want you to be thinking, all right, what does that mean first? And then what does that look like in 2019 as a parent with my kids? Okay? So before we start this, I want to read two passages. I actually have you read them. But there was somebody turn to Matthew chapter 5. I'm just going to read 3 through 11. Very familiar passage, probably everyone in the room. And then Galatians 5, another very familiar passage. Starting with verse 22. Two volunteer readers. All right. Rochelle, take Matthew 5, 3 through 12. And then Tim, Galatians 5, 22 through 26. As soon as you're ready.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who persecute for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you.
But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another.
Okay. Thanks, both of you. So those are lists, if you want to call them that, of characteristics, qualities that Jesus taught or he left for his apostles to teach. And a lot of that is up on the board. Maybe that's specifically the way it was shown or written, but close. Interesting that Jesus said, blessed are. He didn't say, this is what I want you to be. He just says, people who have this quality or this characteristic are blessed in the eyes of God. And people will admire those qualities. So if we are teaching our children, are we demonstrating that? We talked about that a lot. You know, we're trying to model the behavior for our kids that we want them to develop. And we're never going to do it perfectly. like Jesus did. His apostles didn't do it perfectly. But they had qualities that Jesus recognized, part of his insightfulness, that said, these people are teachable and trainable. You have children. We have children who are teachable and trainable. And we need to just embrace that. And I'm sure that we do. We wouldn't be in this class if we didn't have that approach. So that is sort of the introduction to, I'm going to start with humility, because I think that's where Jesus started. The Beatitudes, he said, blessed are the poor in spirit. I think that is humility, but maybe you disagree, or maybe you want to develop that, and we'll give you a chance. How would you describe what Jesus is trying to get across to us? From the perspective of a parent, blessed are the poor in spirit. What does it mean? How could you pass that on or try to use it to teach your children, and what would that actually look like? Rich.
So, a lot of our kids are middle school age and up, so they were in this Abba boot camp this weekend, and Zach McGinnis started it off with, our kids make thousands of decisions every day, and those have an impact on their lives, and that was kind of the focus, was getting them to focus on big decisions and why they're important. And I'm sure David said this from the pulpit, and that's why I wrote it in my Bible here, but C.S. Lewis said about this Beatitude section, we may think God wants actions of a certain kind, but God wants people of a certain kind, right? So he's not saying don't do this and do this. He's saying this is the person inside, and the decisions you make will be totally different if these are the characteristics that you have. And so I don't have any comment on humility, just in general, you know, these things, we're not going to be able to say, oh, here's a specific time that I'm doing this. It's each individual decision in its context is informed by our humility or our mercy or our obedience. And so there's a separate thing. These are in the heart. The actions are parenting on the ground is complicated, but it's informed by these things.
I like that. It is in the heart. So as a parent, how do we get it into the heart of our kids? How do we do that? It's kind of like, how do we get our kids to be passionate about Christ? Is that possible? Is that something that we can do for them? How do we get the kid, our children, to have a heart that wants these qualities? Amy?
I mean, I guess practically, for humility, you can explicitly teach your child, like, okay, I'm sitting all of these out here, like, yogurts. Here are a bunch of yogurts. Don't take yours first, right? You know, like, offer, like, don't be the first person to, like, reach your hand in and grab, right? Like, make sure everybody has. I mean, obviously, if it becomes like a logistical difficulty at some point, right? If no one will take you over. But
these have been decisions made, the old people and young people,
Right, but just like giving them practice of like saying, here, offer one of these, right? And then what's left, then you can choose from that instead of like just wanting to be first, I guess. So just teaching them chances to like not be first. Let someone else go first.
Very good. Kyle?
Well, Rich has said a couple times in this class that this passion and some of these different concepts that we're talking about here, these aren't things that we can just like necessarily teach them and say, okay, now you have it, or put it in them or make them do it. It has to come from within them. And I think one of the best ways that they learn that and that they start to want that within themselves is by seeing the way that we behave. And I think that when we, in our dealings with our kids and in our priorities in our life, whether or not, you know, we're putting God and service to others and all of those things first in our life, and that coming across to them in a way that is a positive thing and is something that is going to make our life better, even during hard times and difficult decisions and those things. When they see that, and they see the effect or the result of that in our life, then the hope is that they will want that, and it will start to, you know, to grow in them as well, so that they can make those decisions like Rich was talking about again, from what is in them, and not because they've just been told, okay, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, we talked, and we're going to continue to talk about it, modeling behavior that we want to teach. And they'll see right through it if we're inconsistent, or if the priorities that we talk about don't line up with the priorities that we're trying to pass on to them.
Great. In teaching being poor in spirit, maybe with a younger age child, taking those opportunities to teach about the grace of God that none of us deserve. For example, we took a trip over to Marin County to do some hiking a week back, and we found ourselves on a toll bridge that we were not prepared for in terms of the fee that we had to pay. And Danny scrounged up $1.75 out of her purse, and I had the kids looking through their wallets and their car seats and stuff, and we could not find $6 in the car to save our lives. But we had a credit card and a debit card, and we had, you know, the funds to pay or whatever, we just didn't have the cash. So anyway, so we got stuck in a line, and a lady opened her window. I said, okay, we have a credit card. She said, no, cash only. I have a debit card. No, cash only. We have $1.75 in quarters. She said, it's $6. So what happens if we can't pay the $6? Well, then you get $31 ticket. I said, well, you won't take a credit card, you won't take a debit card, you won't take $1.75. We have no way to pay your toll. And she said, just move along.
Thank you.
And I'm just so happy about, okay, how are we going to spend the $6 that we have? And I told the, you know, broke open this conversation about we were just given unmerited favor by this woman that we did not deserve, and how that translates into the Christian life or whatever. And it was a good conversation that we had. And so just taking those opportunities to do that, because we are that happens more times than we think it happens, and if we're watching for that, I think it's a good opportunity. The funny part of that story is that as we're hiking, Danny says to me later, you know, I think she just wanted you to move along because you were taking so much time. I said, no, Danny, we were given unmarried. Yesterday we got a ticket in the mail for
ouch. Well, I couldn't help, as you were telling that story, but recall once I was going through one of those bridges, you know, Carquinez or Martinez, or one of those two, and I pull up to give them my $5, and they just wave me through and said, the guy in front of you paid yours. I take just, you know, not myself, my guy. But I take taking the opportunity to pay it forward for somebody a couple times since then. This is like, cool. Okay, we'll come back to that. Jack.
I've been thinking a lot about what we've been talking about as far as we want to instill passion, and that can't be taught, and they have to develop it. And I did agree with that in the beginning, but then I was thinking, I read a book years ago, and one of the things that was brought up was, if you want to be enthusiastic, act enthusiastically. So I think that if we thrust our children into situations, they may or may not grasp it, but maybe they will, as far as trying to get them passionate or trying to teach them a lesson. So one of the things that I have done, I don't know if this is good, and I encourage feedback, is once a year about, I will take a trip with my kids on the light rail, so that they can see what it's like when you don't have a car and people to drive you around all over the place, and the different people that you encounter instead of just everyone who's in your car while you're driving down 50 and that kind of thing, and all the things that go along with that. So, you know, maybe not, that helps or something like that, but I think that
maybe the time of day you take that trip might well,
They need to learn. Yeah.
During the daylight, I would probably say, yeah, that's a pretty good experience. It's 11 o'clock at night.
I've done that too, though. We took a Greyhound down to Southern California, so that they can, and that was an overnight trip. So sorry.
Those are life lessons where, you know, anytime we can teach our kids things about other people that doesn't put, you know, their physical safety in jeopardy, it's probably a worthwhile exercise to go through.
I think you can teach humility if you teach them gratefulness, thankfulness. We need to be thankful and grateful. And also, I think kids need to learn how to say they're sorry. And I think that's part of humility, because if you have to say you're sorry when you're wrong, you're going to have to do that all your life. That teaches you humility. And so I think those two things are real important in teaching humility.
Yeah. Do they see us doing that? And if they see us doing that, then they're more likely. Rich, did you have a...
No, I was going to say is, you know, I'm never wrong, but the one or two times to my children, I've been explicit about how wrong I was, as painful as that was, and it got their attention, and I'm sure they could tell you all the times that's happened very clearly.
Well, unlike you, I'm wrong a lot. Yes, and then Lisa.
I think that, you know, blessed, where it says blessed are the poor in spirit, I think that our kids need to understand that and recognize that they are in need of God's help. And, you know, as parents, we also are in need of God's help. And I think we need to model that to them, where they see us mess up, they see us not perfect, and they understand, okay, how my parents dealt with this. And that's all part of the learning. And so I think that they need to see that you have a heart that understands that, you know, you need God.
Excellent point. I want to come back to that. That's an excellent point. Lisa?
I was just thinking about that when I mess up. And it's...
the one time you've messed up?
When I mess up. Teaching them that I'm not a know-it-all. And opening up that conversation of, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay. Very good. All right. Dave?
There's kind of two categories that are emerging in this conversation that we talk about in the teaching world. And one of them is maybe explicit. There's like explicit direct instruction on some of these topics. There's times where, sit down, I want to talk to you. And we're kind of verbalizing some things. And there's the other example that's coming up is almost that teachable moment. It's like life happens, and here's an opportunity, and you're thinking about it, and you're focused on it as a parent to actually, you know, take advantage of what's happened here, like the lack of sufficient funds to pay the public toll. It's a teachable moment. Something good can come out of that. And I think both of those become really important as parents, that we do both of those things. I also remember in my own life, there's a point at which I can see those like teachable moments by my parents being manufactured, and they're trying really hard to do these example things and make me pick the right yogurt. And there's also these lectures that I'm hearing at some point in my life is blah, 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 blah. But there's also something that happens in your early to mid-20s where I think that stuff, you need those lessons. And it's amazing that they're stuck in there. And you come back to those. And a lot of it, for me, was just great respect for my parents later. Didn't have it necessarily when they were trying to do it, but they still needed to do it. And it paid dividends down the road. It's almost as though seeds are being planted that are going to turn into something better later. They're not necessarily going to get it right there in the moment, but I think that the consistency with trying to express humility later in life when you really need that, you go back to that and you find that and you remember your parents teaching that to you, and it matters and you have respect for it and you hook onto it at that point, and then I think you really use it. So sometimes we got to not get discouraged that it feels like we're talking and you can tell they're hearing blah, 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 and they're rolling their eyes. It doesn't mean this is a wasted moment, and it doesn't mean this lesson isn't working.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mine was kind of a joke. So when we're 18 to, you know, 25, we just look at our parents, just can't believe how much they don't know, how much they just don't understand. By the time we get to be 35, we realize they have learned a lot in those last 10 years. Because we appreciate it. But I want to come back to how Jesus put it. He said, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. What just does that phrase, poor in spirit, what does that, other than the word humility, what does that bring to your mind? Because what would Jesus say if he were a parent? How would he phrase this? Wes and then please.
So I've always heard that the one that I like parallel to that is spiritually bankrupt.
Okay.
So I have nothing to offer God. I can't. He wants me. He wants my heart. But I'm not good enough to say I deserve to be among your people because of look at all of the good things I've done. I think that's the sort of person Jesus is looking for. He came into a society where there was a class of people that thought they were well-deserving, and then there was a class of people who knew they weren't, and he was talking to people who knew they weren't. The other people, he kind of didn't spend a lot of time with them, Pharisees. I mean, he didn't really engage with them anymore, I feel like, than he needed to.
Yeah, he would ask them questions, and when their answers proved their dishonesty, whatever, you know, he just let that hang. Everybody could see the hypocrisy of the life that they lived. He didn't have to say anything, but he spent his time with people who wanted to listen. Lisa?
Holy Spirit, I think of someone who's very teachable and not proud.
Yeah, not proud. I like that. Okay. My thought on that, I like that. I want to come back to something. Forgot you. I don't forget. I never knew your name.
Sean.
Sean. She talked about, you know, our kids seeing in us, you know, an attitude that says it's, life is not all about me. I'm not the one who gets to make all the rules in life, and I'm not going to keep even the rules I do make perfectly. And you know, I'm going to make mistakes. Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." So the people who have the disposition of heart and mind. I said, it's not about me. I am empty without God. And I understand that. If it's not for God's mercy and his grace extended to me, I'm empty. Do they see that in us? The behavior that we live out, as Kyle was saying, you know, it's kind of like all-encompassing. The behavior they see in us, does it communicate to them how dependent we are on God? That I don't want to take any trip. I don't want to do any activity, engage in anything that I don't filter through God. Do our kids see that in us? You know, whatever it is we engage in life, you know, from the fun activities and recreation to the serious stuff, the careers maybe that we choose, the things we let them, you know, participate in, do we explain the principle behind, the logic behind the rule that we just gave to them? And do they see God in that? Do they see that, well, hey, it's because God is first, you know, we're looking at priorities. So with humility, is that what they see from us? Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, the quality of people that says, without God, I'm nothing. And for wonderful reasons, I guess, God said, I'm worth it. God said, he wants me. And my disposition is I'm just so happy. I'm so thankful and grateful, as Christy said, that he thinks I'm of value enough to extend that to me. Do we live our life so that this kind of permeates how we make decisions and how we choose our activities and how we talk, the tone of voice that we use and the way we let ourselves get irritated or annoyed about stuff? We're empty without God. But because of God, we're absolutely full of things that he wants us to be full of. Like the stuff you come up with. And maybe that's a little more fluffy. I want to see what it looks like. Can we think of some activities, some things, you know, like Jack said, you know, I'll put the kids, I'll join the kids on a light rail trip just so we can, you know, maybe be shoulder to shoulder with some people that we might not otherwise ever get a chance to be shoulder to shoulder with. just so they can appreciate that. So what are some activities that might be incorporated into our lives that we could help teach that, or that is, are already a part of your life? Angie's first.
I think that I like where Amy was going, because I think we like practical things. And it starts really early. It starts early in the home with how you, we have 3 or 4 or 2 children, letting the younger one go first, or what. But it always starts with that within the home. When mom walks into the room, does dad get up, give her the seat? When mom makes dinner, does dad say, what do you tell your mom? All the time, constant things all the time. And they'll learn with that, and they'll learn with how the parents treat each other as well. You know, on just a daily practical basis, we had, as you know, a bunch of kids in our home last night. And
2 nights.
Yeah. More a bunch last night than for both nights. But there were a handful of young men who went around and picked up all the trash, folded up the tables and chairs. As soon as I started folding up a chair, grabbed it from me, did it for me. Really stands out in my mind as those kids have been taught to not just sit there and let people serve them. Those kids have been taught, I need to get up and help. And it is service, and it's also humility, because they know that they would rather sit there probably and continue talking to their friends and leave their trash and whatever, but it takes a certain amount of humility to get up and do the thing that they don't want to do.
Absolutely.
And that's kind of life. We really have to teach our kids. There are going to be a lot of things you're going to need to do that you might not want to do. And
yes,
it's something you just got to do it.
And you can do it with enthusiasm, even though we don't like it. I mean, who likes?
Oh, they were all. Let me just say, they were all super kind, sweet. Let me, you know, very. It was, there was no, oh, I got to get up and do that for her. No, it was very kind and lovingly done.
That was another one of my kindness. Rich.
So there's a phrase that rankles and bothered me, but I love it now. In the last 2 years, fake until you make it. And like Jack was saying, right? But you tell them to do it, even if they don't feel it. And once they've been doing it for a while, they'll realize it feels good, and their heart actually will adjust. So, yeah.
Same with thank yous and pleases.
Yeah,
when they're little tiny and you teach them that, they might not know why, but they'll figure it out.
There's a saying that says behavior changes feelings. So if you're feeling down or angry or sad, act the opposite. Do things for other people so your behavior starts changing the way you're feeling.
Wow. Wow. That's, I like that. Just like we, Jay.
Coming from Wednesday night's class, and there was a lot of focus on Jesus' sacrifice, so I started trying to implement that more, that my kids and my family could see what I think and how appreciative I am of Jesus' sacrifice. Just that one simple thought that kept going over and over as a theme until now. So that was good. I did that because I was thinking in my head, I think this, but I don't show it, and I need to show it as an example. But what I loved from it is like how much implying that and any of these things in teaching my kids helps me in my life. And what a benefit that's been since Wednesday night of really just focusing more and more again for myself about Jesus' sacrifice. So it's that kind of impact that all these things are good for me to see. And I'm thinking, yeah, I need to teach my kids that way. But like enacting through all these things, and it just, man, it helps me so much.
Well, the sacrificial love is probably the extreme example of humility. All right, Dave.
I was just going to say that another C.S. Lewis thing is the article he has on charity, which talks about acting charitable or acting loving, even when you don't feel about feeling. So if you look it up, it's a really good article on that, on pretending, if you will, or act enthusiastic so you'll be enthusiastic theme.
And we've probably all done that. Maybe we haven't been cognizant of exactly what we're doing, but listening to Letitia, like, when we really don't feel what we know we need to do, when we do it and we embrace it truly as like, this is something I need to do, but I can choose to be happy or not about it, or I can choose to be enthusiastic or not about it. And that's up to me. And one of the things we're not going to get to, but when we read the little thing from Lewis Carroll, when Alice met the Cheshire Cat, you know, at the fork in the road, and, you know, which way should I go? Well, it depends. Where do you want to go? Well, I don't know. And so, well, then it doesn't make any difference. You know, you've got to choose. And Jesus said, choose the narrow road. He didn't define it. He said, it wasn't do this and do that. He said, choose the narrow road. Well, what is the narrow road? Well, he defined it a little bit. That's kind of on the heels of the Sermon on the Mount. And so he gave them a lot of examples of things we need to incorporate. And as parents, do they see that we have chosen the narrow road? Do they see that, you know, we've set priorities, we're trying to live by them, we're demonstrating love, and we live a life that is totally empty, and they'll be quiet. Okay. Dave will have your Wednesday night.